everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular's single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Welcome to the Tudor Dixon Podcast. Today we are going to cover a hard topic. And I say it's a hard topic because I'm coming from the political world, and I think it's something that became political that should not have become political. And I say that because after my race, I read a lot about the world of transgenderism and kids transitioning and then kids detransitioning. And I thought, are we doing a disservice to kids, I mean, they're children who are going through this by having a political discussion? And I kind of feel a couple different ways about this. I feel like it's not a discussion that should be in politics. But on the flip side, I think it ended up there because there was a loss of trust in the medical community that we thought would always protect, was there to do no harm. And I'm not saying they're purposely doing harm, but it seems as though there have been decisions made to push some kids in an area of irreversible effects that maybe were not best for them. This is, to me, was all stuff that I'm hearing, though. It's all stuff that I'm hearing from the outside. And so I found Tamara Pitsky, and we read her story, and I was like, I need someone who fully wants to care for people, has no political affiliation, but has been through this and seen both sides to help explain this. So she graciously agreed to join us today to talk about this. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you are out in Washington State, and I was reading through your story, and I just found it so fascinating because I was a psych major in college, and I think that you talked about, like, you had gone through losing your mom at a young age, and losing your mom, you felt like, I can help other people. And I think a lot of times when you go into a field like that, I mean, a lot of times people who have had something, childhood cancer, become doctors. So when you've gone through a trauma, you want to help other people. So I knew when I read that you were coming at this from like a genuine place. And then you talk about your practice. When did you start to see things where you said, maybe this is getting dangerous, or we're choosing the wrong thing?
Sure. So the gender affirming care, the mandated training took place in September, and we hadn't really had any trainings that were mandated until then. Like, the trainings that were happening periodically weren't mandated, but that one was. And so I felt like, this seems concerning to me. And so I started doing a lot of research. It was Labor Day weekend. I just like spent the whole weekend after I put the kids to bed, just researching, what is gender affirming care? What are the pros? What are the cons? I realized I had to dig pretty deep, because like when I would Google, what are the dangers of gender affirming care? The results would be things like how to support your LGBTQ friend. Like, I was like, okay, well, now I'm realizing that I'm going to have to look a little bit deeper, because Google's not going to give me a direct answer here. And it just broke my heart to realize that like, there are so many reasons to put a pause on this. And instead, my employer, MultiCare, was mandating that all of its clinicians go to this training. And I went to the training. I asked some questions. They were incredibly hostile towards me, said I was doing damage to people. Basically, I asked, if countries in Europe are pulling back, if they're pressing pause on this and reevaluating things, why are we not just like running full steam ahead, but saying that like, if you don't do this, you can't work for us anymore. Like, this is best practice. Hmm. There's evidence to the contrary and they're just ignoring it, you know? And so I asked these questions and the chat box just blew up saying like, you are part of the problem. You need to check your biases. So that's kind of where it all began.
I think that it's funny you mentioned this, the European model, because I think that as a candidate running and we're in the midst of this where we start to see all of these kids, and it's like a real uptick suddenly of young girls who are deciding that they want to transition. And at the same time when I was running, we started to see the British model changing and they're like, you know what? We're going to step back a few paces. Maybe we don't want to do surgery on kids right away. Maybe we don't want to go this far. And we started talking about this and it was, I think, kind of like a secret where people were like, look, I agree with you. I don't think it's political. Don't really want to talk about it. Don't fear it in my family. But you never know what your kids are watching. But families, I think, at the same time, are ashamed. I mean, we've seen some of these chat groups where parents are ashamed because they feel like they're losing their kid, but at the same time, they're being told this is the only answer. And that was a story that I read six months ago of a mom who was like, I had to say goodbye to my daughter and accept that I was going to have a son. And I can't tell you how those feelings work inside of me. And no matter who I spoke to, they were like, no, you have to accept this and be encouraging of this. So I think that that's something that a lot of people don't really think about is how it affects the outside family. I mean, we're focused on the kid, but it's the whole family that goes through this. And it's a weird thing when you suddenly see the medical community saying, you have to, you have to, you have to. You had three patients that kind of put you went through this with them and you said, something feels off. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So, I mean, MultiCare actually sent me a cease and desist about that. I'm not supposed to go into details.
Oh,
about
okay. Well, you don't have to then. Yeah.
But you can read about it in the article. So okay. I'll just say that. Go to the Free Press article and you can read all about that. Basically, in short, I had these.
I mean, think about just what you just said is like shocking. You are not allowed to talk about your own experiences that you felt were leading you to say this may be harmful to kids. No. And I think that that's something we sort of kind of expect from doctors is to go, okay, I'm questioning some of this science because science is about questioning. And as something new comes out, you question it, but you're not allowed to question it. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Yeah, absolutely. I remember sitting my boss down after I found out that one of my clients was going to be taken away from me. Like, risk management decided that I couldn't have them anymore because I was asking questions. They had an extensive trauma history. There's so many other factors at play. And I remember sitting her down and I was like, does this feel okay to you? Like, we can't ask questions without losing our clients. Like, parents are bringing us their kids thinking that we're going to be able to help them. And we're not doing anything but just like rubber stamping whatever the kid says and saying, yeah, absolutely. This thing that you're experiencing as a 13-year-old, probably you know exactly who you are. And who of us at 13 knew who we were? Like, yeah. It just breaks my heart, you know? And I remember talking a little bit with my friend. I was like, my daughter woke up with a cough one day and I was like, if I took her to the doctor right now and the doctor was like, you should probably get her on like a lung transplant list, I'd be like, oh my God, like if you don't do this, you're going to kill her. I'd be like, okay, absolutely. I have to do that then, you know, mm-hmm. I probably would get a second opinion, but that's what we're doing to these children. Like if you don't affirm your child, then you're going to kill them. Like they will commit suicide. They'll whatever, or you're going to lose them in some other way. Like that is, as a parent, so terrifying to hear. And that's what we're doing, rather than being like, you know what? Yeah, absolutely. Let's walk this process out with them. Let's let them get a little bit older. But there's so many other factors at play, especially the social piece, right? I feel like there was a huge uptick during 2020. Kids were on their phones a lot and they were like, oh, okay, maybe I am this thing that I'm seeing now. You know,
because you're trying to figure out who you are at that age.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the nature of hormones going through your body, and you are literally changing. So you don't feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And oftentimes I feel like there's a autism diagnosis. And so then I feel like that needs attention too, because often children with autism don't feel like they fit in anywhere. And so maybe they'll think, oh, the answer here is in my gender. Like I'm not actually this gender. You know, I just feel like there's so many other things that we should be exploring and working through with these young people. And instead we're just swayed by whatever they say.
Yeah. We've never really historically questioned the medical community. And I think that I tell this story. I experienced this when I had cancer, because I went to my local hospital and they were like, this is the treatment. This is what you have to do. And inside of me, something went, I don't know if that's the only treatment. It was a treatment. There's no question that was a treatment. But was that the treatment that I was going to say was best for me? And so I think that that's something we're not used to as a society. We're inherently trusting of our medical community, believing that the person that right there in town is going to tell us the best thing. And it's okay to push and say, well, I want to see something else. But I think that with this particular issue, people have felt like if you're pushing, you're trying to do conversion therapy and convert the person back to being the gender that they were born as. But it's weird, because the science would show that 8 out of 10 kids that have gender dysphoria when they're young will grow out of it. So why can't you have that conversation? I guess that's where we're all going. Why?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. It doesn't make any sense to me. I also feel like, as far as the medical community, how are you supposed to have any faith in a system where, you know, like if practitioners question authorities and say like the higher ups and say, hey, is this really the best thing? They'll be silenced. Like, how are you supposed to have faith in a medical community where the people who are providing the direct care, if they air a concern, might just be silenced and not able to actually explore that further?
Right, because that is what happened to you, and that
Absolutely.
We really haven't gotten into. So you talked a little bit about the cease and desist, but this was because when you pushed back, they pretty much just said, see ya, you're no longer here.
Yeah, so when I started to ask questions and send emails and just like thought out things about like SOC 8 and, you know, just different things that I was reading, like there can be other factors at play that could impact a child's gender identity, you know? And when I would ask these questions, I would be met with just like this response that no, there's no other factors at play. If the child is saying that they are not the gender that they were assigned at birth, then they're not. And you have to just take them at their word with that. And so when I got asked to write a letter for a 13-year-old to start testosterone, I was like, I absolutely can't do that. Like, there's so much else going on here. And so I asked the person who did the training again and my boss, and they reported me to risk management. And when I met with risk management, I thought, okay, finally, she'll go through the chart. We'll realize like, oh yeah, there are some other things here that really just need some, you know, therapeutic attention rather than just fast-tracking them to the gender clinic. And instead, they decided that I was the risk, not starting the kid on testosterone. And so they took the client from me.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's LEESA.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
You and I have kind of had a similar experience when it comes to trying to figure this out, because it's a genuine, I mean, I do believe that there are people with gender dysphoria. Like I said, I studied this in college, and back 30 years ago or 25 years ago when I was in college, this was in the DSM. You know, we were studying that there was gender dysphoria. We know that it exists, but it is not this common. And I think that's when some of us started to go, whoa, wait a minute. How did it happen that all of a sudden there are so many people that feel that they were born in the wrong body? And generally it was once the person became an adult, they would say, hey, I've always kind of felt this way. But really, parents weren't taking children of age 2 and saying, oh, my kid is obviously in the wrong body. So I think that we both started to dig into what is really going on. And as you dig into it, the stories are heartbreaking of these kids who had their genitals removed, their breasts removed. And especially, I think it kind of was something that was near and dear to my heart as someone who's gone through a double mastectomy as a cancer patient, knows what it's like to, you know, that's no longer your body, right? But I had to, because mine were killing me. They were told theirs were killing them, but it wasn't true. And so these women who oftentimes did go through some sort of abuse or have some other, like you talked about, autism or a feeling of disconnection, were convinced sometimes at 15, sometimes at 17 to have their breasts removed. And then it seems like there's usually like a 5 to 7 year period for those who weren't actually meant to transition to go, wow, this was wrong, but they've had these life-changing effects.
Yeah, I know. I hear that story too, you know, those stories too. And I think I could not live with myself if I signed my name to a document where 5, 10, 15 years from now, the person is in that place where they're like, I can't believe that like my therapist just smiled and nodded and agreed with what I was saying at 13. And now I don't have my breasts anymore. You know, like, how can I live with myself?
Well, and I love the fact that you, I think it was interesting that you were like, oh, well, now that this is being reported, they'll dig into her files.
Yes.
And they didn't. And the reason I find that fascinating is because that's what all of these detransitioners said. Why didn't people ask me more? Why didn't they dig deeper? Why didn't they find out what was really at the root of me feeling like I wasn't myself?
Because we're not allowed to, which is baffling to me. Like, so as soon as somebody comes in and says that they have gender distress, we have to just throw out all our clinical training. We can't do our jobs anymore, or else it's considered conversion therapy or something like transphobia or whatever, you know?
But doesn't it go against everything that you have been trained in? I mean, you're supposed to dig deep. I remember when I worked at our clinic at the University of Kentucky. And if you were a student there, you could work in the clinic and read through the files as long as they weren't someone connected to the university or student. And you could read so deeply into how these people had talked through their trauma in their life and how they had worked through and how the therapist worked through this with them. Such a desperate need. And here you are, this person who is so genuine in what you do, and you were taken out. Then you ended up going someplace else and they saw the article and then you lost that job. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been, they didn't say that was why. They just said, I don't think you're the right fit for this position. And so then I was, you know, single mom of three with no income, you know, it's been so hard. And I still have no regrets because I feel like somebody has to advocate for these children. Somebody has to have a voice and say like, no, this isn't okay. We need to like reevaluate things.
So what do you see as the next steps? Because I was reading about what some of these kids were saying. It honestly made me feel incredibly guilty that I've spoken on this topic as a political person, because they were overwhelmingly like, now that I've come out and I've said that this wasn't me, people call me this like right wing crazy person and they're saying I'm political and my body is not a political issue. And I'm like, gosh, we've heard that in so many cases where people come out and jump on something politically. But these kids really need an advocate. And how do we say, gosh, look at Great Britain, look at, it's like the Netherlands and all these other countries that are saying, hey, this was wrong. Talk a little bit about that, because they have changed what they're doing, correct?
Yeah, they have. I don't know a lot of the details of it because I just know that they have done the best like long-term studies and that they have decided that like, you know, we need to stop this. We can't, there's no way right now to know which of the children that are presenting with gender distress are going to grow up to be adults who are like, yeah, no, I still experience this. So if we can't determine that right now, which of the, you said 8 out of 10, you know, will sort of outgrow it or end up being gay or something down the road, right? But like, if we can't figure out who the 20% are, then we need to not do anything. These are children, you know, we can't just like make these decisions based on what they're saying, you know, without any sort of like ability to really evaluate that.
Isn't that kind of what therapy was supposed to be, though, was to talk through, get through every week and go through the challenges of what life is and try to do that and change mindset and the way you interpret things and the way you think about things, rather than trying to medicate it away or cut it away. And I'm not saying change mindset from the standpoint of, hey, this is not who you are. I mean, change your outlook on things, like try to see things in a positive way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And you know, I'm not an expert on this topic. I'm just a therapist and I'm just a mom. And I hope that like people can feel free to speak out, even if they don't have like years of experience being an activist in this area, you know, like if something feels wrong, like have a voice about it, you know, it's just so important. And I think that that's what it's going to take for things to change, is people saying, no, I'm going to, you know, not let you intimidate me out of saying that I have concerns about this. And I mean, unfortunately, people detransitioners down the road to sue. And I hate that it would have to come to that people were going to keep hurting children. But I think that's kind of what it's going to end up taking, because no one seems to be really listening all that much.
That's actually an interesting point, because we've had this discussion multiple times about other issues where people have sued, whether it comes to something happening in school or social media or whatever it is, that is a situation where it's like, you know what, money talks. When people feel it financially, then they start to change. And maybe that's these hospital systems or a bigger, you know, AAP or whatever it is, because I think when we saw the American Academy of Pediatrics come out and be like, oh no, you have to do this, people started to go, what? This, we've inherently always trusted you. This is the agency that takes care of our children. And then you're saying this, and at the same time, we're seeing these stories of kids who have had their penis cut off and then they can never have a normal, they can never urinate normally again, or they leak, or there's, and I know this is very graphic, but I think that when I think about this, when I think about mutilating a child like this, and there is no way that you can fully understand what that means at that age. And I think honestly, even going through a double mastectomy myself and knowing I had to go through it and going through all of the details of it, until you've lived it, you do not know what that is to have part of your body cut off. And this is so much more extreme to think about what they're doing to children's genitals. And you see these scars on the legs and the new body parts built. And then generally, these people go, I didn't know what was going to happen. And I think the most criminal part about this, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, and again, it is graphic, but I think a big part of our life as human beings on this earth and when we're here is intimate relationships and finding someone that you can love and fully live life with or have those experiences with. And that is something that is robbed from these children, whether it is these puberty blockers that cause them to never grow sexually and they can never have an intimate relationship, or it is having your body parts cut off and you never feel down there again. And that seems to be consistently, I hear from detransitioners, we weren't told. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something you've been concerned about, right?
Yeah. So when I was reading through the different gender clinic notes, there's like a form where they just kind of like fill in things for the kid, you know? And I'm not convinced that kids are really, like, I had one client who their initial appointment with the gender clinic was given the okay to start testosterone. Like, and this is a client who in their therapy sessions with me wasn't really very verbal. So I found it kind of shocking that they would be willing to, or be able to verbalize things the way that the note said that they were. And I know that there was a spot in the note where it said, like, if your therapist isn't affirming, then that can cause you, you know, harm. And so you should find one who is affirming, which basically means one who will write this letter for you. But yeah, I don't think that they are being, this information is being really spelled out. And how could it be if after the initial appointment, they're given the okay to start testosterone or, you know, some other sort of procedure?
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep experts. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
We need to be clear about one thing, because the political world getting involved in this, from my perspective, was generally, genuinely, as a mother who looks at this and goes, gosh, how can you permanently damage a kid like this? We got to put this off. We've got to wait. We've got to talk through this and wait. And I think most parents in the political world went, what are we, how could we possibly do this? But it became demonized talking about it, because if you didn't accept it, you were transphobic, and it was that you were not attacking the medical community or the surgery. It was that you were attacking the child instead of protecting the child, which I think most people who are like, What are you talking about? Their goal was always to protect the child. They were created into this monster who wanted to attack the kids. And then you had all these activists come out and yell about it. I don't deny that there is an LGBT community out there. I don't deny that there are people who feel like they are in the wrong body, and that there are successful transitions in the world. And that happens to adults. In fact, one of the people that I read about had a transition between at about 15 years old, detransitioned at 30, and is now a person who is out there saying no transition should happen before 25. And I agree. I think we've all learned that that's when the frontal lobe is fully formed, when you can actually understand consequence. Why would we allow children to have surgery before they can understand the consequence? I know that you are an advocate to that community, and you want to take care of them. So you created a nonprofit called the LGBT Courage Coalition. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I didn't create it. I think Jamie Reed was behind that. But they are supporting people who are coming out to have a voice in this area, and just saying, like, you know, if you end up speaking out against your employer, or you know, saying like, I have concerns about this, and your family turns on you, your employer fires you, like, we will catch you. Like, we will help you. We will support you. We will make, like, they set up a give, send, go for me, so that I'm not just like not able to provide for my family. Like, they just, I think it's just important for people who have these concerns to know that there is an organization out there who will help you, like, will help you get through whatever ends up happening when you decide to say, to speak out and say, I have concerns.
Well, I think that's key, because I think if what I've read is true, there are multiple people in the medical and therapeutic community who are saying behind the scenes, this is messed up. We can no longer do this, but they can't speak out. And I mean, I think that this is very similar to when we went through some of these pharmaceuticals that were coming out, and people were like, I don't want to say that I don't think it's right, because I don't want to screw up grant funding and things like that. There's just a community that is hard to speak out against when you're doing research or when you're trying new things. So I think that's important. If you are out there and you've seen something that you say, this is wrong, and you genuinely know it's wrong, this is an organization that can help you if you do speak out and you do get fired. It's the LGBT Courage Coalition. Yep. So check that out. I think it's so important. You know, I want to ask before I let you go, what do you think the future is? Is there something that we can do? Is there a role where maybe a political advocate comes together with a medical advocate and can do something to say, let's take a look at protecting kids' emotions out of it, transphobia out of it? What does it take? What is the reality? What are other countries doing? Do you see a world where that could come together?
I have to believe that there is one. And I know that there's a lot of people who are fighting this fight who are not going to give up until that happens. So I'm very encouraged to know that there's people who care about our young people. And this is not a transphobic or political issue for them either. Like, we just want to make sure that we're not harming children. So that's I believe that can happen. I just think it's going to be a slow process.
Do you see an opportunity for you to go back into therapy?
Yeah, I'm working on opening a private practice. So that's another way I can, you know, help these families, is just by providing a place where we do therapy and not just, you know, fast track them to medicalization.
This has become kind of a national story because it was in the New York Times. You were in the Free Press. A lot of people have heard this. Have other detransitioners reached out to you at all and said, hey, thanks?
You know, I've gotten, anyone who's reached out to me, fortunately, has been very like encouraging, and a lot of times they do have an experience with it, whether it's themselves or it's a parent who's like, my child went through this, and now, you know, I'm so grateful for this, that they ended up figuring out who they were before they ended up having surgery or whatever else, you know. Yeah, a lot of people have reached out and just been like, thank you for having a voice. This is so important. And I'm grateful. I'm so grateful that, like, I've been given a platform to have a voice and just say, something is not right here with the medical community. And you really need to vet your therapist that you're sending your children to, because they might be operating under a rule from their employer saying that if they don't, you know, do gender affirming care, then they're not going to be employed there anymore.
I think there's always a line that we're trying to figure out. What is the line between where government starts and private citizens, you know, government ends and private citizens begin? And at what time do we want government to step in? And I think that there have been people politically who have come out and said, I'm running and this is an issue for me and I'm going to take care of it. And that's when people feel like, oh, wait a minute, this person is getting too far into my private life. But I do think there's a place where elected officials can advocate for folks like you, sure, for detransitioners, and go to the medical community and say, hey, can we look at this? Can we just reasonably, as scientists, look at this? And can you come back to us and tell and explain to us why other countries are doing it differently and why you think that the United States needs to do it this way? I think that's a hard place for us to get to because there's been so much drama about around this. But I would really love to see some of our elected officials partner with someone like you and be able to say, hey, can we have some hearings on this? Can we have some discussions on this that are reality, where we actually go through the true numbers of kids who have to have something done and kids who should wait? I believe that everybody should wait and not have any permanent interventions until they've gone through that, you know, 25-year-old point of fully developed and understanding what's happening. But I do think that there's a path for people to join together and protect kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I know the Courage Coalition sent out letters to my local politicians to just let them know, you know, this is what's happening at MultiCare. And as far as I know, no one responded. So it would be so great if people could be like, you know, yeah, let's look into this and not see it as like a left or right wing issue, just to look into it and make sure that the kids in our community are being taken care of.
Well, I mean, that's definitely interesting. And sometime I'd like to talk to you about that more, because maybe that's the right route. Maybe we take it out of the political world and it goes into the medical world and those people chat. But Tamara Pitsky, thank you for your bravery and thank you for talking about this today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And thank you all for joining us on the Tudor Dixon podcast. For this episode and others, go to tudordixonpodcast.com. You can subscribe right there or head over to the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next time on the Tudor Dixon podcast. Have a blessed day.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year, or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extrahelp.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.